Released from the claws of the wind, the barge rolled back onto an even keel and yielded to the pull of the breath of Horus. Her elephantine bows turned up into the current, and she came parallel with the wharf at the exact moment that her side touched the dressed stone, and the rush of the Nile killed her forward way and stalled her motionless in the water. One last command from Thanos, and before the ship could gather sternway, the mooring ropes were cast onto the wharf and swiftly gathered up by eager hands and made fast to the stone bollards. Lightly as a goose-down feather floating on the water, the great barge of state lay safe and serene at her berth, and neither the throne upon which Pharaoh sat nor the high crown upon his head had been disturbed by her moorage. We, the onlookers, burst out in a roar of praise for the feat, and the name of Thanos, rather than that of Pharaoh, was on all our tongues. Modestly and very prudently, Thanos made no attempt to acknowledge our applause. To draw any further attention to himself that might detract from the welcome that awaited the king would have been folly indeed, and would certainly have negated any royal favour that his exploit had earned him. Pharaoh was always jealous of his royal dignity. Instead, Thanos surreptitiously signalled the breath of Horus alongside. When she was hidden from our view by the bulk of the barge, he dropped overside onto the galley's deck, quitting the stage on which he had just earned such distinction, and leaving it now to his king. However, I saw the expression of fury and chagrin on the face of Nembet, the ancient admiral, the great lion of Egypt, as he came ashore behind Pharaoh, and I knew that Thanos had made himself another powerful enemy. I was able to make good my promise to Lostrice that very evening when I put the cast of the pageant through their dress rehearsal. Before the performance began, I was able to give the two lovers almost an hour alone together. In the precincts of the Temple of Osiris, which was to be our theatre for the pageant, I had set up tents to act as dressing rooms for each of the principal players. I had purposely placed Lostrice's tent a little further apart from the others, screened from them by one of the huge stone columns that support the roof of the temple. While I stood on sentry duty at the entrance to the tent, Thanos lifted the opposite panel and slipped in under it. I tried not to eavesdrop on their cries of delight as they first embraced, nor to the whispering and cooing, to the muffled laughter, and to the small moans and gasps of their decorous lovemaking which followed. Although at this stage I would not have made any attempt to prevent it, I was convinced that they would not carry this lovemaking to its ultimate conclusion. Long afterwards, both Lostrice and Thanos separately confirmed this for me. My mistress had been a virgin on her wedding day. If only any of us had known how close upon us that wedding day was, I wonder how differently we might have acted then. Although I was acutely aware that every minute that they were alone together in the tent increased the danger for all of us, still I could not bring myself to call enough and separate them. Although the welts on my back that Rasfa's whip had raised still burned, and although deep in that morass of my soul where I attempt to hide all my unworthy thoughts and instincts, my envy for the lovers burned as painfully, still I let them stay together much longer than I should have done. I did not hear my lord Intef coming. He used to have his sandals shod in the softest kidskin to muffle his footfalls. He moved silently as a ghost, and many a courtier and slave felt either Rasfa's whip or his noose on account of a careless word that my lord overheard on his noiseless peregrinations through the halls and corridors of the palace. However, over the years I had developed an instinct that enabled me most times to sense his presence before he materialized out of the shadows. This instinct was not infallible, but that evening it stood me in good stead. When I looked round suddenly, he was almost upon me, gliding between the pillars of the hypostyle towards me, slim and tall and deadly as an erect cobra. "My Lord Intef!" I cried loudly enough to startle myself. "I am honoured that you have come to witness our rehearsals. I would be deeply grateful for any advice or suggestions." I was gabbling wildly in an attempt to cover my confusion and to alert the lovers in the tent behind me. In both objects I succeeded better than I had any right to expect. I heard the sudden scuffle of consternation within the dressing tent behind me as the lovers broke apart, and then the flutter of the rear panel of the tent as Thanos ducked out the way he had entered. At any other time I would never have succeeded so easily in deceiving my lord Intef. He would have read the guilt upon my face as clearly as I read the hieroglyphics on the temple walls or my own characters on this scroll. But that evening he was blinded by his own wrath, and intent only on taking me to task for my latest misdemeanour. He did not rage or roar with anger. My lord is at his most dangerous when his tone is mild and his smile silky. "Dear Taita," it was almost a whisper, "I hear that you have altered some of the arrangements for the opening act of the pageant, despite the fact that I personally ordered them. I could not believe that you have been so presumptuous. I had to come all this way in the heat to find out for myself." I knew it was of no avail to feign innocence or ignorance, so I bowed my head and tried to look aggrieved. "My lord, it was not I who ordered the changes. It was His Holiness, the abbot of the Temple of Osiris." But my lord broke in impatiently. "Yes, of course he did, but only after you put him up to it. Do you think I do not know both you and that mumbling old priest? He never had an original thought in his head, while you have nothing but—"
"My lord,"
I protested. "What devious little trick was it this time? Was it one of those convenient dreams sent to you by the gods?" my lord asked, his voice as soft as the rustle of one of the sacred cobras that infested the temple, sliding across the stone flags of the floor.
"My lord."
I did my best to look shocked by the accusation, although I had indeed given the good abbot a rather fanciful account of how Osiris, in the guise of a black crow, had visited me in my sleep to complain of the spilling of blood in his temple. Up until that time, the priest had voiced no objection to the realistic piece of theatre that my lord Intef had planned for the amusement of Pharaoh. I had only resorted to dreams when all my efforts to dissuade my lord had failed. It was deeply abhorrent to me to be party to such an abomination as my lord had ordered to be performed in the first act of the pageant. Of course I am aware that certain savage peoples in the eastern lands make human sacrifice to their gods. I have heard that the Kassites, who live beyond the twin rivers Tigris and Euphrates, cast newborn babes into a fiery furnace. The caravan masters who had travelled in those distant lands speak of other atrocities performed in the name of religion, of young virgins slaughtered to promote the harvest, or captives of war beheaded before the statues of a triple-headed god. However, we Egyptians are a civilized people, and we worship wise and just gods, not blood-crazed monsters. I had tried to convince my master of this. I had pointed out to him that only once before had a pharaoh made human sacrifice, when Menotep had slit the throats of the 7 rebel princes in the Temple of Seth and quartered their corpses and sent the embalmed fragments to the governors of each of the gnomes as a warning. History still remembered the deed with distaste. Menotep is known to this day as the Bloody King. "It is not human sacrifice," my master had contradicted me, "merely a well-merited execution, to be carried out in a rather novel fashion. You will not deny, dear Taita, that the death penalty has always been an important part of our system of justice, will you? Todd is a thief. He has stolen from the royal coffers, and he must die, if only as an example to others." It sounded reasonable, except that I knew he was not at all interested in justice, but rather in protecting his own treasure and in impressing Pharaoh, who so loved pageant and theatre. This had left me with no alternative but to dream for the benefit of the good abbot. Now my lord Intef's lip lifted in a smile which exposed his perfect teeth, but which chilled my blood and raised the hairs on the nape of my neck. "Here is a little piece of advice," he whispered close to my face. "I suggest that you have another dream tonight, so that whichever god it was that visited you last time has an opportunity to countermand his previous instructions to the abbot and to endorse my arrangements. If this does not happen, I will find some more work for Rasfa. That is my solemn promise to you." He turned and strode away, leaving me both relieved that he had not discovered the lovers and miserable that I was forced to go ahead with the vile display which he had ordered. Nevertheless, after my master had left, the rehearsal was a heartening success that revived my spirits. Lostris was in such a glow of happiness after her tryst with Thanos that her beauty was indeed divine, and Thanos in his youth and power was the young Horus incarnate. Naturally I was perturbed by the entrance of my Osiris to the stage, aware as I now was of the fate that my lord Intef had ordered for him. My Osiris was played by a handsome middle-aged man named Todd, who had been one of the bailiffs until he had been caught dipping into my Lord Intef's coffers to support a young and expensive courtesan of whom he was enamoured. I was not proud that it was my examination of the accounts that had brought to light the discrepancies. My Lord had released him from custody, where he was awaiting formal trial and sentencing, to play the part of the god of the underworld in the pageant. My Lord had promised not to take the matter further if he fulfilled the role of Osiris satisfactorily. The unfortunate Todd was unaware of the hidden menace in this offer and threw himself into the act with pathetic enthusiasm, believing that he was about to earn his pardon. He could not know that in the meantime my Lord had secretly signed his death warrant and handed the scroll to Rasfer, who was not only the state executioner but my choice to play Seth in our little production. It was my Lord's intention that he should combine both roles on the following evening, when the pageant was performed before Pharaoh. Although Rasfer was a natural choice for the role of Seth, I regretted having cast him in it as I watched him rehearse the opening scene with Todd, and I shuddered as I imagined how the main performance would differ from the rehearsal. After the rehearsal, it was my most pleasant duty to escort my mistress back to the harem compound. She would not let me leave, but kept me late listening to her excited resume of the day's extraordinary events and the role that Thanos had played in them. "Did you see how he called upon the great god Horus, and how the god came at once to his aid? Surely he has the full favour and protection of Horus, don't you agree? Horus will not let any evil befall us, of that I am now certain." There was much more of this happy fantasy, and no more talk of parting and suicide. How swiftly the winds of young love shift. After what Thanos did today, the way he saved the state barge from wrecking, surely he must also have earned Pharaoh's high favour, don't you think so, Taita? With favour of both the god and Pharaoh, my father can never succeed in having Thanos sent away now, can he, Taita? I was called upon to endorse every happy thought that occurred to her, and I was not allowed to leave the harem until I had memorised at least a dozen messages of undying love which I was sworn to carry to Thanos personally. When, exhausted, I finally reached my own quarters, there was still no rest for me. Nearly all the slave boys were waiting for me, as excited and garrulous as my mistress had been. They also wanted to have my opinion on the day's events, and particularly of Thanos' rescue of Pharaoh's ship, and the significance of that deed. They crowded around me on the terrace above the river as I fed my pets, and vied with each other for my attention. "Elder brother, is it true that Thanos called upon the god for his help, and Horus intervened immediately? Did you see it happen? Some even say that the god appeared in his falcon shape and hovered over Thanos' head, spreading protective wings over him. Is it true?" "Is it true, ach, that Pharaoh had promoted Thanos to companion of Pharaoh and given him an estate of 500 fedan of fertile land on the riverside as a reward? Elder brother, they say that the oracle at the desert shrine of Thoth, the god of wisdom, has cast a horoscope for Thanos. The oracle divines that he will be the greatest warrior in the history of our Egypt, and that one day Pharaoh will favour him above all others. It is amusing now to look back on these childish prattles, and to realise the strange truths that were adumbrated in them, but at the time I dismissed them, as I did the children, with mock severity. As I composed myself to sleep, my last thought was that the populace of the twin towns of Luxor and Karnak had taken Thanos to their hearts completely, but that this was an onerous and dubious distinction. Fame and popularity breed envy in high places, and the adulation of the mob is fickle. They often take as much pleasure in tearing down the idols that they have grown tired of, as they did in elevating them there in the first place. It is safer by far to live unseen and unremarked, as I always attempt to do.